Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Today, our show is brought to you by Betrayed, the anthology, the first anthology for a cause published by Authors on the Air Press. You can find it anywhere in where ebooks are sold. It is also a very special bucket list day for me. My guest, Susan Wiggs, has been writing beautiful women's fiction for as long as I can remember. I think she is the pioneer in this, what is now, I guess, considered a subgenre, because it seems everyone, all the former romance writers, are writing women's fiction too. It's glorious work, beautiful work, and always, always has a lovely little tale that is empowering with it. Susan's new book is called Map of the Heart, and it's exceptional. I hope that you'll enjoy hearing Susan. If you want to call in and say hello, I'll open the phone lines. The number is 347-633-9609. All the way from Puget Sound, the glorious Susan Wiggs. Susan, thank you so much for joining me today on Authors on the Air.
You're very welcome, Pam. This is kind of a bucket list for me, too, because my favorite thing other than reading and writing books is probably to sit and talk about books. So thank you. Thank you. And
you're
thanks
welcome.
To all your listeners.
Thank you. You know, it's so funny because we first met when you were down here for Southwest Readers Fest, and then we kind of bumped into each other like passing in the hallway at RWA. And I thought that was really cool. And it really spoke to me, saying, this means you must have Susan come on the show sooner rather than later. And thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on the show. It's really an honor for me. I want to talk to you first about your books, because I tried to count up how many you have, and it's too many. How many books have you written?
Oh, my gosh. You know what?
I decided
after book number 50 that I wouldn't count books anymore. I would count years. And so this is kind of a cool year for me because it's exactly year 30 of my career as a published author. I published my first book in 1987, Texas Wildflower. It was a rip-roaring, western, bodice-ripping historical romance. And, that came out in 1987, and here we are 30 years later, and I'm still at it. And so,
and my gosh,
I'm not,
you're only 35.
Sure,
how did you do that?
I guess it means that I'm extremely persistent, and I have to say every successful working writer I know just has that kind of stick-to-itiveness in her.
It really is true. How has women's fiction, and I'm by that obviously it was romance, just romance when you first started, how has it changed over the years, and how have you changed with it?
That's such a good question. How has it changed? I think that it evolves the way any cultural art evolves over time. You know, popular fiction, just like popular films and art and music and things like that, it just develops according to, you know, where the leaders in the industry lead them and where the readers mm-hmm. vote with their, you know, with what's popular. And so I simply evolved as a writer by being a reader, I would say. My tastes and my interests changed, but I would say that there's always a common thread in popular fiction for women, and, well, I like to think of it as popular fiction for everybody, but the truth is most of our readers are women. You know, we cherish and
yes.
admire our male readers and wish there were even more of them, but it's an overwhelmingly woman-dominated readership for, I think, most fiction. And so I think that I like to write about all the loves that fill a person's life, you know, romantic love, sibling love, you know, parents and children, friends, lovers, frenemies, all of those things. And I just love, not in real life, but I love drama. And so it's kind of a natural fit with me to follow, you know, where the drama leads me, whether it's to, you know, a lake in the Adirondacks where I wrote a whole series of books, the Willow Lake series, the Lakeshore Chronicles, to Map of the Heart, which is my latest, and it's one of my most personal books. And so in terms of evolving, I think I've become braver as a writer and less worried about really, really exposing my heart and my, you know, and things that are very personal to me to the reader. I believe I was a little more intimidated by that dynamic for a writer when I was younger and less experienced. And now that, you know, I've written so many books and I've had so much feedback from readers, I realize the books that really resonate with readers are the books where I expose myself and make myself very vulnerable to them. So
I find that fascinating. It's fascinating to me because I have sometimes writers on the show who use a pen name. I do not know what their real name is, and I only know the information that they will give me from their website or other articles that I research on them. Yet you are willingly opening yourself up, and you're not afraid to talk about your own feelings or reveal them in your books, via your books, via the written word, which is amazing to me and lovely. I want to talk a little bit about you and your lifestyle and your surroundings and what your environment, part your environment plays in your writing. You tell an interesting story that you live at the water's edge on an island in Puget Sound, and that to go anywhere, if the weather is good, you take a motorboat to get to dry land.
I have done. There's a ferry. You know, Bainbridge Island is it's very pretty here, but it's not like a remote island. We can, you know, if I take my motorboat around the little point, you know, by my beach, I can see downtown Seattle. But it's quite a, you know, but the water isolates us, and I think it makes it. Oh, it makes it a lot more pleasant. But I do have to say, and this is for people who are scrambling to get their books written, or, you know, they dream of it. They say, oh, I don't have any time to write. I don't have the right place to write. If you really have the fire in your belly to write, you will be writing in a closet, in a waiting room, you know, in your car while you're waiting for your kid to get through piano lessons, or, you know, sitting in the bleachers at a swim meet, anywhere where you have, you know, 10 minutes of downtime, you're going to be after that. And believe me, that was my life for the longest time. And then I feel like being on the island and having this lovely work from home situation now is a reward that I've given myself for, you know, how hard I've worked at this craft for 30 years.
How wonderful. That sounds fabulous. I have heard said that, if you really are a writer, you can't not write. Is that true, even after 30 years?
It is true, and it's interesting because I'm, you know, I'm having these conversations now with people who want to, you know, plan the rest of my financial life for me, and, you know, the investment counselors and so on, and they're always asking me about retirement, and it's a and it's one of those things where I do know people that they've circled the day on their calendar and there's actually a stopping day. You know, I'm going to be retired on this day. And I think for a writer or somebody who's in a creative field, it's almost part of your blood and bone. And so I imagine, you know, there could be a time in my future when I don't write as quickly or that I write something that is more experimental or in a different genre. I'm actually, you know, taking a screenwriting class online just because the process interests me. I don't know that I could ever write a screenplay, but I want to learn more about it. And so there are different things that I would do, but I think I will always write.
How fascinating. Tell me, what genres would you like to write in other than your own?
I would like to learn how to write a screenplay because I have a couple of ideas that would probably unfold better on the screen. I would love to learn how to write, a play, for example, things like that. Mm-hmm. And they're not really genres. They're more forms, but there are certain modes of storytelling that are interesting to me and kind of mystifying. I speak with journalists a lot, and I'm fascinated by the fact that they can write a short piece and get it out, you know, in record time, this polished short piece that would take me forever. I think some of the short pieces that I've written have taken every bit as long as a novel for me. And then I hear back saying, oh, my gosh, you wrote a novel? How can that be? So I think I think people in fields of writing are always peeking over the fence, I suppose.
I think you're probably right, but you make a good point about journalists who really have to tell a whole story with a limited amount of column inches. So it's kind of, I guess, like short stories. You can extrapolate from a longer work, but really it has to have a beginning, middle, and end, just like anything else. Isn't that true?
Absolutely, and I love the shape of a really great piece of journalism, where it hooks you in the beginning, which is pretty much the way any piece of writing needs to. It develops through conflict and you know, sort of poking at you and piquing your interest, and then you know, resolves itself in some way in the end. And so I think that we're just naturally drawn to stories, and that is the shape of any story, whether it's a short piece or a long novel or, you know, a film or a TV series.
Right. How do you think that television influence, speaking of, influences reading, or do you think it does at all?
I think that the television seems to be flourishing in this golden age, and a long-running series that you can now, you know, stream and binge watch sort of unfolds like a novel. You know, each episode is like the chapter of a novel, and
it really is.
I'm a big fan of that. I don't know that does it divide people who are avid readers? Does it sort of deflect their attention away from the book to the screen? I don't know. For me personally, no. I read myself to sleep every night. I do watch series and TV and movies and everything, but not, you know, I don't sacrifice any of my reading time because that time is too precious to me.
It's interesting that to hear you talk this way, because on my Monday show, I had the legendary playwright John Leonard Pielmeyer on with me. He is the man who wrote the play Agnes of God and several others.
Oh my gosh,
he
loved
it. He's actually on the West End. He did the play for the theater version of The Exorcist, and they are just getting into rehearsals now. But he wrote his first book, and he also commented that he felt that the streaming shows particularly were also like a novel, and because he's been a screenwriter as well. And interesting that you want to try screenwriting, where many screenwriters decided to do books. I think that at least what they tell me is they have the good bones to build the foundation of book writing, because screenwriting is so different. You're not taking into account the descriptions of someplace. That's put in their form. They're really talking about action and dialogue, which, after all, is really what moves a book forward, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is. A lot of it that I'm discovering is formatting and timing and things like that, but the shape of any piece of drama is there are definitely similarities. Like I don't know that I could ever choreograph a dance or write a piece of music, but I do feel like I would love to explore more in playwriting and screenwriting.
Interesting. I want to ask, kind of unwind a little bit back to just before 30 years ago when you were first published. Had it been your intention to be a novelist?
Yes, it had been. you know what? This is awful, but there was never a time when I didn't think I would be a novelist. And I'm talking about, you know, 4 years old and 6 years old and third grade when I first learned cursive writing. And, you know, there are all these milestones. And the reason that I know that is that I had a very busy mom. She was a teacher. She had three small kids, you know, just one, all of us in a row. And so, and she was just that mom that when I was 2 years old and I would say, write this down, and I would tell her a story, she would actually do it. And not only would she do it, she kept these little scribblings that I made and the stories that I told her, and she mailed them to her parents when she would write them letters. Of course, she was a young mom, and she had no time to write letters, so she would stuff,
sure,
you know, my stories in an envelope and say, here's what Susan did this week. You know, isn't she funny? And so my grandmother, when I was a young woman, she gave me a shoebox full of my old writings dating back to when I was like 2 years old. And so I realized that that was a glimpse into my mind. And I know that people can come to writing at any stage. I've taught writing workshops where a senior citizen will approach me and say, I've never written a word, but I have a story and I want to tell it. And I've also, you know, in that same workshop, there might be a 12-year-old who's written, you know, four novels, and that would have been me. So
wow.
It was always tension, but I was quite a realist. I understood that, you know, nobody's going to pay you to be an aspiring writer, so you need either a patron of the arts, which most of us don't get to have, myself included, or you need, you know, a day job, and that's the way,
sure,
I and most of the writers I know sort of got our feet under us in terms of writing. We just made time to write in the off hours, the weekends, the evenings. And I was a teacher. I was a teacher for 11 years while I was getting started with writing.
Wow. Speaking of programs and so on, I note that you went to the embassies in Buenos Aires and in Montevideo. And you gave writing programs.
That was unexpected. You know, in Louisiana, they have a term, lanyap. It's like an extra grace and a little unexpected gift. And it was such a lanyap to get this call from my literary agent. She had heard from, and this shows what a small world book people can be. The person who was the cultural attaché at the embassy in Argentina also was affiliated with the American Library Association. She had been, I think, on their board or something, and she was a fan, and it was her job to find three American authors to bring to a major book fair, and the embassy had a booth there, and it's a yearly event. And I was given the opportunity to travel there and to speak with students in publishing programs there and to meet readers. I had coffee with a book group. It was amazing. It was like one of these peak experiences of a writer's life,
yes,
to go into such a different environment and meet people and suddenly realize we all have this in common.
Oh, well, I was going to say the determination to write, or the desire to write, the desire to publish, the desire to create, is pretty much the same wherever you are, isn't it? No matter what language
it is,
you speak.
Especially now that I've had some experiences with readers and reading groups and publishers overseas. I don't know how many books in translation I have, but they're all over the map. I just got a box of books in – I haven't even had a chance to look up the language. It's some sort of Balkan language. And I'm ashamed to say I can't recognize it. Usually you can read a few words on the page and realize, oh, this is Italian, this is Japanese or whatever. But this one kind of has me mystified. So I actually had to start I started a collection on Pinterest online called Foreign Affairs. And when I get my books in translation, I pin a picture of them so that, you know, I can keep track of the different languages that my books are published in. But what's exciting to the writer about that is not how different our cultures are, but how much we're the same, how much we love to read. We love the written word.
Yes. I know that we're on a timeline, and I don't want to take you, I don't want to keep you longer than I have to, but I must ask about the apple orchard. And is it indeed, I know you've been optioned for film. Is it going forward?
Yes. I wish I had more news to tell you. I do know that it's been optioned twice by Crown Media. I believe there's a script in progress. And
how exciting.
Beyond that, I suppose people will have to watch me on Facebook or Twitter or one of the social channels and find out when the air date's going to be and what's happening with that. But it's super exciting. I love one of the things I love most about my books is when I get to listen to them on audio, because after a book is published, I'm kind of sick of myself and I don't want to read it again because I see all the flaws. But I will listen to my books on audio because it kind of brings a different dimension to the story, and I love a really good voice talent reading my books. So I'm very interested to see how it would translate to the screen. So, yes, The Apple Orchard.
How fun.
Possibly next year we'll see Map of the Heart right now. I believe it's, you know, in the hands of my film agent right now, and that's another one that, oh, my gosh, that would be just a dream come true.
It would
to
be
see
a
Map
spectacular
of the Heart.
That would be a spectacular film, too. Susan, what's next for you before I let you go?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I need some help from you and your listeners. They could it's probably best to tweet to me if they're on Twitter or find me on Facebook. But I'm desperate to find a title for my new book. It's a story that I've just, oh God, I'm like knee deep in the revisions, and I'm kind of, you know, nervous about how much I'm loving the story, because I wonder if it's like, you know, maybe I like it too much. But we have no title for this book. I'm terrible with titles. Right now it's called Chopped Liver. So I need people to tweet me their favorite titles for books and see if anything sparks for me.
Okay, where can we find you on Twitter? Are you just at Susan Wiggs?
Yep, at Susan Wiggs, all one word, and same on Facebook. And they can go to SusanWiggs.com and find all of my channels, my Instagram.
And by the way, lovely website, too. Easy to maneuver. You're not caught up in tons of moving parts, which is delightful.
Oh, God, thank you. Yes, I know. I made a simple, clean website. I hope people enjoy it.
Absolutely. It's fabulous, and it's lovely, and I can't thank you enough for coming on. Now, come your next conference next year, we discussed this in the green room, you and Deb Kuntz are going to do an In Conversation together, right? I have your word on it.
She's one of my favorite authors. People.
Okay. I want it on podcast so I can say you said it, and there it is. So,
super.
Best-selling author of Rita Award-winning Fabulous Women's Literature, Susan Wiggs. Thank you for being with me today. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. You certainly have made mine.
Okay, Pam, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you. Bye-bye. And that's our show for today. Susan Wiggs is just delightful in person and on the radio. I'm so glad you joined me with Susan today. Thank you for being here, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Goodbye. Thank you.